And hello, thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and you're listening to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Null's network. And we got some very interesting statistics from our station the other day, looking at how many listeners we have, of course, online. You might be listening in your car, at your computer, on your iPhone, anywhere you are. We're very, very happy to have you aboard with us. And we get so much feedback in the way of emails, and you can go to naturalnurse.com to make a comment, or, of course, Facebook, The Natural Nurse, is a great place to get involved with what we do. And Dr. Zamperone and I are very active out in the field, so we have some amazing conferences coming up that you can actually join in on. One is in October, and that's being put on, hosted through Stony Brook University, and I'm a clinical instructor in the Department of Family Medicine at Stony Brook University, and then Dr. Zamperone is a professor at the University of Bridgeport. And those two are co-hosting a conference that is actually open to the public called Natural and Integrative Medicine Symposium. And very, very cost-effective. Also, it includes 5 CEU credits for all kinds of health professionals, including nurses. So we would love you to join us there at Southampton, and that is coming up. So just go to naturalnurse.com, and you can look under schedule and find out more and how you can register. Get 5 CEUs or just come as an interested person. The keynote speaker there will be Dr. Diadamo, Dr. Peter Diadamo. Many of you know him because Dr. Diadamo has written several top-selling books, including Eat Right for Your Type. I will also be lecturing, as well as many other presenters, Dr. Nan Liu, who is a head acupuncturist and Chinese medicine specialist. And we're going to have information on the safety of herbs, how herbs can be regulated appropriately so you know you're getting the very best products. So those are all things that are coming up. You can join us in Chinatown for a day of Chinese medicine where we visit Chinese herb shops and actually get involved in tongue and pulse diagnosis. So all kinds of adventures for you and your friends. And thank you so much for listening to us right here on Progressive Radio Network. Today, we're very happy to have as our guest Dr. Stephen Goldsmith. He is a medical doctor who graduated from the Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons, and he has practiced conventional general medicine, internal medicine, and psychiatry, receiving training and extensively practicing psychodynamic and gestalt psychotherapy, conventional and Ericksonian hypnotherapy, strategic and systematic individual and family therapies, and homeopathic medicine, which is very unusual for a psychiatrist. So we are so happy to bring on board as our guest today, Dr. Stephen Goldsmith. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Ellen.
Now, I do want to tell you that I have a long history of working with holistic psychiatrists, because I'm wondering if you were familiar with Dr. Serafina Corsello. Dr. Corsello, it was unfortunately, she has since passed away, but I was her head nurse for 23 years. And she ran a very large holistic center both in Manhattan and Long Island. And she was a psychiatrist and then developed into more of a holistic general practitioner, because from using holistic therapies in psychiatry, she saw that they worked so well that she got interested in using them in other ways. So I think it's really exciting that you came to look at natural medicine and how it can help your patients. How did that happen for you?
Well, a combination of factors, Ellen. Over the years, as I practiced first conventional internal medicine and general medicine, then psychiatry, I became disillusioned and frustrated with the limited results. A number of people were getting well, but hardly anyone was getting fully well. hardly anyone was being cured. And also I became increasingly upset with the propensity of conventional practice, with the predominating use of pharmaceuticals, as we all know, to produce ill effects, so that patients were not uncommonly worse in some ways than when they started. So there was that factor. And there was my dawning awareness of other approaches. I had always been interested in the interface between physical and the emotional, and I began to see that they're not separate, they're one, and that the only way actually people can get truly well is for treatment to address the whole person. Now, that's become something of a buzz phrase in recent years, holistic, but in fact, when we think about it, when we get any ailment at all, let's say we cut ourselves or we have a sore throat, what part of us helps us get over those, the cut, heal the cut, or resolve the infection in our throat? Well, it's all of us. It's not just one part of us. It's our immune system, our circulatory lymphatic systems, neurological endocrine system. Our whole being helps us get well. And the only way that I saw that treatment could fully cure people was to do that for us. So I became first interested in relatively unorthodox forms of psychotherapy that addressed actually the whole person in many respects. And then I stumbled upon homeopathy, which at first, my first exposure to it made me think that, well, this is nuts and this can't possibly be worth anything. And I forgot about it for a while, but I came back to it because of so many intriguing reports of people getting well from that. And so I looked into it. I underwent extensive training in that. And I've been practicing homeopathic medicine along with other modalities, Ellen, for more than 20 years. So there were these parallel courses of my becoming more and more disillusioned with conventional approaches and my interest more and more in approaches that treated the whole person, such as homeopathy. And why I kept going with homeopathy, which is actually a very difficult discipline to practice because it's completely individualized, why I kept going is because I saw people with medical and psychiatric problems getting completely well in a way that astonished me, because they had problems that all of my colleagues and myself had hitherto deemed to be incurable. I saw people with bipolar disorder get totally well, with very, very severe depression get fully well, and the like. And so that kept me going, and it continues to keep me going as I've also explored other treatment approaches that I outline in my book.
You know, I don't believe they sent me a copy of your book. Why don't you tell us the name of your book?
Okay. Minor detail. It's The Healing Paradox, and it's a healing paradox, a revolutionary approach to treating and curing physical and mental illness, and it's on Amazon, available through bookstores. And the book itself addresses a central contradiction.
That's why you call it The Healing Paradox.
Exactly.
Which is
perfect. You got it. The contradiction is this. Our conventional Western traditional system of medical treatment, actually, because of its attitude towards disease, prevents the cure of disease and keeps us unwell. It's the ideas that undergird conventional Western medicine that can save lives and reduce and manage symptoms, but can prevent cure. And it's no accident that our society has seen, as you well know, Ellen, has seen an ever-increasing proportion of its population that is chronically ill, physically, mentally, all ages. It has not that much to do with the fact that we're getting older, we're living longer, because this affects all ages. We're an increasingly chronically ill society, and Western medicine's ideas about treating disease have a significant amount to do with that. So the way to cure people, to cure a disease, but really to cure people who have disease, is in fact, and there's a lot of evidence for this, is to do the exact opposite of what Western medicine does. And I can elaborate. So, but in short, what my book shows is that what we think has been good about conventional medical treatment is bad. And what we think is bad, what we think will make us worse, is often good. Now, this will sound initially bizarre, I'm sure, to many listeners, until they consider the following two main points, which I think are incontrovertible. Nobody will disagree with them, and when you put them together, one can see why my weird assertions are correct. The first point is our attitude towards disease is an adversarial one. We consider disease to be our enemy that we feel obliged to combat, to oppose, and our physicians try to do exactly that when we come to see them when we're sick. They try to change us sick people, by usually through pharmaceuticals, sometimes other means, in order to, they hope, help us get over the problem. So they try to change us with pharmaceuticals, which are not natural components of our systems. Unfortunately, there's a universal and fundamental law of nature, Ellen, that says that living beings, all living beings, including us, resist any attempts by any outside influences to change them. It's a matter of homeostasis. It's a matter of us as living beings trying to maintain a certain inner physiological stability in the face of perpetual, recurring environmental disturbances and threats of one type or another, weather changes, pollutants, microbes, foreign chemicals, including pharmaceuticals, which don't belong in our bodies.
Well,
either.
That's unfortunately a really big point. You know, Dr.
Yes.
Goldsmith, that is a fabulous exposition that you just talked about in terms of the healing paradox, which is, again, the name of your book, The Healing Paradox. It brings to mind, you know, I've been doing holistic medicine, and perhaps you don't know, since 1964. So I'm very interested in all the things you're sharing and have studied them deeply myself and see that they work. I remember going to a lecture by Dr. Alan Gaby, who you may be familiar with, really wonderful doctor, and he wrote several books. And one lecture he was given is that in medical school, you're actually taught not to use the word cure. It's
mm-hmm.
about managing.
Yes.
And he
yes.
went to holistic medicine and natural medicine for similar reasons. He got very frustrated in his position
yes.
as a physician who is not allowed to discuss cure or even think you can cure anybody.
Yes.
And that
yes.
people would get more and more ill instead of more and more well. And a lot of that was
yes.
due to the adverse effects of the pharmaceuticals.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I quite agree. And we're actually hardwired in order to survive. We're hardwired to resist Western medical treatment as it now consists of the pharmaceuticals in particular. I liken Western medicine at this point in its evolution to a football coach who designs these brilliant offensive plays, these fantastically ingenious runs and passes, and he's all excited, his team is all excited. What they've forgotten about is that there's a defense on the other side of the ball that's going to try to stop them. And so Western medicine ignores the fact that we naturally resist influences from what do not belong within us to begin with. The other point, which is so crucial, that I'm sure that you, Ellen, and Dr. Gabby and so many others do subscribe to, but which Western medicine may pay lip service to, but they do nothing about, is what was mentioned by Dr. Albert Schweitzer many years ago as the central rule of healing, and that all healing is self-healing. The only way to cure illness, the only way for us to get completely well, is to accept and ally and strengthen and support our own inner healing resources. For if treatment is to be effective, Ellen, it needs to stimulate or enhance those resources. There's no other way. Treatment cannot provide those resources for us. So that's the second central reason why what I term the healing paradox exists. And this is going to sound even more weird to some listeners who are going to wonder, wow, you invited a crazy man on the program. But here it is. Where do we look for these healing resources, these self-healing resources? Well, the answer is that we look for these inner self-healing resources of ours in disease. All manifestations of disease contain both the problem and they include our system's attempts to overcome that problem. So they contain both. For example, when we have a bad sore throat or an earache, we can develop a fever, let's say 101, and there's pain and redness and swelling. There could be fluid, pus. All of those manifestations reflect our organisms, our system's attempts to overcome the problem, to kill microbes by raising the temperature of our bodies. That's what fever does. Fever activates heat shock proteins in our cells, which help our cells to become less vulnerable to trauma. When we reflexively reach for our Tylenol with a mild or moderate fever, what we do is deprive our system of its own attempts to deal with the problem. The same with inflammation. That's what our immune systems, circulatory, lymphatic systems, etc., are doing to try to get rid of the problem. Now, do we just sit back and, if we're sick, do we just sit back and do nothing and let our systems try to overcome the problem? Well, if it's going on for a while, it means our system's attempts aren't working well enough. So we just don't do nothing. But for treatment to actually cure somebody, what it needs to do is support to even, one can say, ally with, embrace, or stimulate those self-healing resources. That is the only way. There's been research on, for example, a problem that all parents know all too well, and that's the recurrence of middle ear infection in children that has become more and more and more prevalent over the years. Well, there was a study at the University of Pittsburgh, close to 500 children who had otitis media middle ear infection with fluid behind the ear, showing that when they received antibiotics, these children were more likely to have a recurrence of the same problem again, were more likely to have hearing loss, and were more likely to have a developmental delay, probably because of the hearing loss. So in that particular instance, what Western medicine does is seemingly to transform an acute problem into a chronic problem. So
that is so interesting. I have to jump in here because that was the exact example I was thinking of, because as a medical school professor, which I am at Stony Brook, that is actually one lecture that is well received when I talk about natural interventions for otitis media, because it is so well documented in all the medical journals. What they are instructed to do is hold back on pharmaceuticals and just watch and wait, which I think is the wrong way to go. And of course, the patients get very aggravated because the doctor says, well, just go home and wait till you get sicker. And so they're very open to have a specific protocol that I share that will support the natural healing. It does include herbs, homeopathics, external compresses, massage, that the parents can use as a self-intervention at home. And guess what? They never come back for that second appointment because it has not advanced.
Yes, fantastic. Yeah, I wish more people did that. Often my Western medical colleagues are in the position of saying, well, yes, yes, we know what we're doing isn't working satisfactorily, but what else can one do? Well, there, as you're indicating, there's a lot that one
Exactly. So that's the thing. They need to be educated. You know, we do need to take just about a little break right here. And I do want to tell our listeners that we're listening to a fabulous discussion by Dr. Stephen Goldsmith, medical doctor. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion talking about his book, The Healing Paradox. Wonderful information. Thank you so much for joining us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we'll be right back after this Natural Medicine Chest.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll talk about high blood pressure or hypertension.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is a disease of the Western world and a product of modern civilization. Cultures that continue to adhere to an indigenous lifestyle, which includes low stress levels, a non-refined whole foods diet, as well as vigorous exercise, experience virtually no episodes of essential hypertension. It is very interesting to note that when individuals from these societies emigrate to Western countries and adopt Western habits, they too fall prey to hypertension. Naturopathic treatment of hypertension has not changed essentially in the last century. The mainstay of the treatment still relies on diet, exercise, stress reduction, lifestyle modification, with secondary support from other modalities such as hypotensive phytotherapy or herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, which is the therapeutic use of water, clinical nutrition, as well as homeopathy. We'll focus on phytotherapy in this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest.
Let's talk about Taraxacum officinalis. This is an unpopular nuisance to many homeowners trying to build that perfect lawn. However, this common weed, the dandelion, is a powerful yet safe botanical medicine for the treatment of hypertension. In a Romania study in 1974, the common dandelion was found to be as potent a diuretic as a commonly used drug called Lasix. Dandelion, however, due to its rich levels of potassium, acted against potassium ion depletion, a dangerous condition known as hypokalemia, seen as a side effect of many antihypertensive drugs which promote diuresis. The leaf of the dandelion was a more effective medicine than the root, although the root is utilized by naturopathic physicians and has a powerful liver-specific medicinal quality.
Crataegus oxycantha, also known in the vernacular as hawthorn, is a common tree in the family Rosaceae, or the rose family. Extracts of the plant in the Western literature date back far beyond the Middle Ages. Even the Chinese were privy to its usage, especially as a digestive tonic. The therapeutic principles are found in extracts from the leaves, berry-like fruits, as well as the flowers. In Europe, Crataegus is well respected for its effects at lowering blood pressure, blood lipids, reducing angina attacks, and preventing and perhaps reversing atherosclerotic deposition in arterial walls. This plant has demonstrated a remarkable safety record, but because of its powerful effects, it should not be used with certain cardiac or hypotensive drugs and should be used by a qualified practitioner of alternative medicine.
Other herbs are also helpful for hypertension. such as garlic, olive, and olive oil, and ginkgo biloba.
So if the pressures of life are making your blood boil, don't forget about these herbal medicines the next time you reach into the natural medicine chest.
And we're back. I was thinking there might be a little music, but we'll join you right back right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And thank you so much for joining us today. You can always visit us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or naturalnurse.com. Check out the schedule because we have so many events both online and in person that you can join in with us. As our guest Dr. Goldsmith is talking about today, we have a full conference on natural, in fact it's called the second annual evidence-based natural and integrative medicine symposium, where we're talking about all the science behind the kinds of therapies that we talk about here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z all the time, and how you as a healthcare provider or as a patient can access knowledge so that you can use these things effectively. And one way to do that is to get Dr. Stephen Goldsmith's book, The Healing Paradox. And today we have as our guest Dr. Stephen Goldsmith. He is a graduate of Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons and has a long list of education and resumes. And he also has given presentations at the International Congress on Ericksonian Approaches to Hypnosis and Psychotherapy in Phoenix, Arizona, the U.S. Psychiatric and Mental Health Congress in Atlanta, and the annual Rethinking Psychiatry Symposium in Portland. And he does live in Portland, where we're talking to him today. Thank you so much for getting up so early for us for our radio show. And thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
I'm delighted to be here, Ellen.
Now, you are very involved in, of course, you were trained, and I really honor your use of the word conventional, because when we talk about traditional, I like to use the word traditional to support ancient traditional healing technologies, and the word conventional about our more modern system of medicine, and it seems like you're using that word that way as well.
Yes, that's point well taken, Ellen. There are a lot of older, historically older forms of treatment that had it more right than we currently do in our conventional treatment. They attempted to treat the whole person. They attempted to use natural resources and create dietary interventions. So we have a considerable amount to learn from them. So I think that's an excellent point. One can make a distinction, a good one, between traditional and conventional.
Now, what about the development of more effective healthcare, I mean, in psychiatry? Because what I've seen happen with psychiatry, and tell me if I'm wrong because I am not a specialist in that area, was that there used to be more talking and less just immediately pharmaceutical interventions, and now it seems that most of it is done not so much psychology but psychiatry through the use of pharmaceuticals.
Yes, that's unfortunately true. And I became more and more disengaged with the conventional aspects of my profession in recent decades for that very reason. Psychiatrists now tend to view people as conglomerations of molecules that need to be targeted in certain ways so as to rectify the psychological or behavioral problems that they have. And yes, only a very small percentage, really, of psychiatrists still do exclusively psychotherapy. I think the statistics are like 10 or 19% at most. It's more like 10%. And not many psychiatrists include psychotherapy anymore to speak of in their treatment.
Well, some of that, we have to talk about the fact that doctors are being assaulted, because if they were to take most conventional insurance policies as payment, they can spend approximately 8 minutes with a patient. And you're not going to be able to do a very intense psychiatric session if you were talking to someone in 8 minutes.
That's right. This is such an overdetermined problem, such a complexity of factors that have resulted in psychiatry now becoming essentially a practice of the internal medicine of the mind, doing what internists do, but strictly on psychological or behavioral problems. Our insurance coverage policies are such, psychiatrists' own attitudes towards treatment are such, that more and more there's an incentive, there's a financial and practice incentive for psychiatrists to see fewer and fewer people for psychotherapy, and for insurance companies to refer fewer and fewer people to psychiatrists for therapy because they have to pay them more than they pay psychologists or social workers. So there are a number of factors involved, but yes, I've been very unhappy with the course of my profession. I went into psychiatry because I loved it. It offered so much room for creativity. You'd get to know a person well. You'd help them use their inner healing resources to overcome their problems through talking, and that's gradually gone by the boards. There's an anecdote which I personally love, I hope listeners do as well, that I think illustrates the problem and the conundrum with conventional psychiatric pharmacological treatment, as it does, I believe, conventional Western treatment. And it's this. It has to, it's mentioned in The Healing Paradox, and it's this. I had heard about Chinese restaurant cooks when they've burned themselves, let's say, with boiling oil in the course of their food preparation. What they've done to get over the burn quickly and completely was to stick their hands near the flame of the burner. And the burns would initially become more painful, and then the pain and the burn would go away. So I had heard about that.
Wait a minute. Say that again, because that certainly did sound like a paradox to me, Doctor.
Yeah. I had heard about these Chinese restaurant cooks who promptly and fully healed their own burns by sticking their hands, usually with their hand, near the open burner of a stove, so exposing it to heat, making it hotter, and curing the burns that way. Well, I thought that was so fascinating that I wondered if that was true. And so a few years ago, I had a chance to try that out. I was working at a clinic, and I spilled boiling water accidentally on myself. It jostled out of a teacup I was holding, and it hurt like heck, as you could imagine. And my hand was turning red and getting swollen, and I could well see a second-degree burn forming. So I thought, now I can find out. And I ran to a bathroom, and it was hurting like hell. And I stuck my hand under a stream of hot water. It hurt worse for about 30 seconds, and then the pain started to subside. And about another minute later, when I took my hand out of the stream of hot water, I had no pain. I never had pain again from that burn. There was literally no evidence of a burn at all, except for about 2 millimeters of redness near the base of my thumb, and that went away by the end of the day. And I was absolutely thrilled. I felt I had discovered that I had seen for myself some secret of nature, and I ran around trying to tell my colleagues, even a couple of patients, wow, you know what happened? And they, of course, looked at me as if I had completely lost my mind. But it's funny, two of the editors who worked on my book, The Healing Paradox, subsequent to the publication, they told me, well, actually, on the strength of what I had written, they burned themselves, too, after the publication. They did the same thing, and it worked great. The burn went away. Now, here's my point, that this is not just an isolated oddity. And by the way, after I did all of this, I saw that research has actually been done. Dr. Shahami in Iran at one of their major teaching centers and his colleagues actually found that exposing the burns of mice, laboratory mice, to heat increased the healing, expedited the healing of the burns, and which was nice to see experimental support. But here's my point, that ordinarily when we burn ourselves, the first thing, it hurts, it's hot, the first thing we think of is applying the opposite, cold. The colder the better. Stick it under cold water, in a basin of ice water. That's our natural response to anything.
Correct.
That's a problem. Any kind of pain, any problem, we try to diminish it. We try to block it, evade it, avoid it, fight it. That's our response to anything. Unfortunately, it does not work in conventional medicine insofar as curing us. So that, for example, when we burn ourselves, let's say a finger, and we stick it in cold, the cold relieves, it controls the symptoms, the pain is less, as long as we have our finger in the cold. As soon as we take the finger out, as soon as our self-treatment ceases, the pain is back, and we're going to end up with blisters if it's more than a first-degree burn, and it's going to be a relatively prolonged period of recovery from the burn, despite the cold. And this is what conventional medical treatment is about. As long as you're taking the treatment, if it's appropriate treatment, the symptoms may well improve. You may feel better as long as you're doing it, but it doesn't cure you, and as soon as you stop it, the problem is likely to come back because it does nothing to alter the underlying propensity we have for healing. Whereas in the case of the burn, but in the case of so many other instances in medicine and psychiatry, if we actually go with the problem, if we actually ally ourselves with it, it actually can go away much faster, and we can be cured. So this is a kind of first aid home remedy example of a general principle that medicine knows nothing about, even though in its own way it has employed for a couple of centuries or so immunizations, and more recently, immunotherapy for allergies, which are kind of paradoxical treatments. One has problems with them for reasons perhaps beyond the scope of our talk. But medicine actually has its own paradoxical treatments, but it hasn't caught on that that's a central healing principle of nature, of staying with the problem, aligning yourself with it, even encouraging it. And we find that in the most effective psychiatric treatments, we find that in a number of medical treatments. Homeopathy, of course, is famous.
Well, throw out a homeopathic that you might use, let's say, in the case of a burn. But, of course, what's so interesting with homeopathics is it has a lot to do with various things going on with that individual rather than just the fact that they got burned.
Exactly.
Or what are some that might come to mind, you know, like more of a first aid remedy rather than a constitutional remedy?
Oh, causticum can be very good. Remedy causticum, also calendula. Those can just work absolutely beautifully, sometimes urtica, urines. Cantharis for really severe burns. So those are the main ones. I love calendula. I love calendula for all kinds of things, and it can work very nicely for burns, and we're talking about ointments, we're talking about poultices of drops of the remedy in water.
Isn't it fantastic the way these things work? And what about the cost effectiveness of these kinds of treatments? I mean, to me, it should be standard of practice that we should have on board everything that works all the way, and certainly as a psychiatrist, I'm sure you'll agree, I have personally seen as a nurse, and I've actually worked in psychiatric centers, that some people have a better life when you look at the risk-benefit ratio, even with the pharmaceuticals, than they would without, where they're able to function instead of being tied up somewhere, you know, the rare individual. And so we don't want to throw all those things out, but then they're used overwhelmingly inappropriately for much milder situations when much more cost-effective and long-term healing could go on with things that you are recommending. So I don't know why we can't bring that all into play and use what's best for each patient.
Right. I agree with you, and treatment needs to be far more individualized than it is now, because each person, in order to get over their problems, whether it be a physical health or a mental health, has his or her own unique set of resources that can be brought to bear, and we don't know what they are unless we get to know that person as an individual. What do their systems do better? What are their weak points, and to take advantage of those. My feeling about the applicability of paradoxical approaches is this, Ellen, that whenever possible, in my view, those should be the first line of approach.
Exactly.
Unless if somebody's life is immediately at stake, well, yes, you could do those also, but then you need to do other things. Or if it's such a chronically extremely grave, potentially grave problem, like malignancy, for example, then do what you have to do. You can also use the paradoxical approach to do what you have to do. But whenever possible, those would be my first preference, because they actually strengthen people rather than simply combat one aspect of them.
So true. Well, hold that thought. And we are speaking today with our wonderfully informative guest, Dr. Stephen Goldsmith, medical doctor, psychiatrist, and author of The Healing Paradox, which is a book you want to have on your shelf. As he said, it's available on Amazon.com, and I'm sure you know any local bookstore that you have. And we're going to just hear from Progressive Radio Network now about all the great shows that we have available right here on Gary Null's network. And when we come back, we'll be rejoining our guest, Dr. Stephen Goldsmith. We'll be right back with more on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And you can contact us anytime. Go to our website at naturalnurse.com, send us an email, click on schedules, or you can go to education and learn how you can get a certification in various aspects of natural medicine. Join us at webinars, seminars, on-ground healing modalities all over the country, and we love to hear from you. Suggestions for guests and topics are also welcome. And if you have things to say that aren't that great, we like to hear that too. We love complaints, because then we can better our show to suit you. Remember to visit the archives at prn.fm, which has our show, The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and all the other great shows here on Progressive Radio Network. Today we have as our guest Dr. Stephen Goldsmith, medical doctor, with a long list of attributes and expertise that he has. If you've been listening, you know. And he is the author of the book, The Healing Paradox. And The Healing Paradox goes in not only to Dr. Goldsmith's premier philosophy on integrative medicine, bringing in what works, bringing in what's natural, bringing in what really heals people as the first line of intervention, but also the way conventional medicine actually may be working against our health very often. So thank you so much for all your great work, Dr. Goldsmith.
Thank you, Ellen. I'm thinking, putting myself in the listener's place, if it's okay with you, I'd like to just suggest to listeners some things that they can do on their own, utilizing the sorts of paradoxical principles that we've been discussing.
That's excellent. Please do that.
Kind of take-home points. And I'll mention to start with what would be ordinarily considered psychological or even behavioral difficulties, which many of us face. The paradigm for the best case for the use of the principle of the healing paradox is in situations in which we're actually struggling against ourselves, in which we are trying to stop ourselves from experiencing something, but yet we are, or trying to stop ourselves from doing something, but yet we are. Paradoxical interventions on ourselves can work beautifully, and I'll give you some examples. First of all, probably the prototype is grief. Most of us, if not all of us, have experienced grief at some point from the loss of a loved one. The way to get over it, and it can certainly involve painful feelings, is to accept them, to, in a sense, embrace those feelings as part of what you get through in order to recognize and respect that loss, and you stay with those feelings, and if you do, and if you can, those feelings go away. If, on the other hand, as mentioned with burns, with all kinds of problems, we try to get rid of pain rather than face it and go through it. So if, in fact, grief becomes so painful that you try to avoid it, you put it out of your mind, you keep a stiff upper lip, and get on with your life without getting through those feelings, you're much more likely to end up being depressed or to have various psychosomatic physical symptoms as a result. So supposing that happens and you decide, well, I need to see a therapist, I'm just having a very hard time since I lost so-and-so, you go to see a therapist. What does the therapist do? The same thing that I did when I put my finger under the hot water. The therapist has you, as gently and as empathically as possible, face what you're trying to combat, what you're trying to avoid. And then, over time, you can actually get through that and the painful feelings can go away. That's a prototype. What we can do in any situation in which we're fighting against ourselves is to actually stop fighting, because when we're fighting with ourselves, one part of us is trying to stop the problem, but the other part is emboldened and strengthened by our attempts to stop it, so it digs in its heels and we have this internal conflict. So that, for example, a method that started out being utilized by some of the most radical maverick therapists of the 20th century has now become a fairly standard part of sleep hygiene recommendations by physicians, and that is, if you're struggling with insomnia, just lying in bed, you need to go to sleep to get up in the morning for work, but you can't sleep, and so instead of fighting it, you go with it, you get up, and you do something. So at least if you can't sleep, you're doing something useful and productive, And most of the time when you do that, eventually you start, because you're not fighting with yourself anymore, you start feeling very sleepy, and then you can get back into bed and go to sleep. And that's become more and more, as I say, a standard part of sleep hygiene treatment for insomniacs. Performance anxiety, social anxiety are also great examples of the opportunity to use the principles of the healing paradox. There have been therapists who have written about this, Viktor Frankl, Milton Erickson, others, who have worked with people who were terrified of encountering other people because they were frightened they would sweat too much or blush or faint or tremble. So these therapists would have their patients encounter people and deliberately try to bring on those problems, make themselves tremble more, sweat more, blush more, even try to make themselves faint. And, of course, they couldn't, because those symptoms are fueled by anxiety. But if you're deliberately trying to do something, then you can no longer be anxious that it might happen. So, and the people solve their problems that way. Stutterers have found, and there's a stutterer in your geographic area, Peter Reitzes, who wrote about this, a speech therapist, that among the most effective interventions for themselves that they can make, perhaps the most successful intervention, he said, was to actually, when they're encountering strangers and they're terrified, ordinarily they're going to stutter, is deliberately try to make themselves stutter. And there have been groups of stutterers, self-help groups, who have gone to malls, trooped into malls, and sort of spread out and approach strangers to ask them questions or whatever, and deliberately tried to stutter, and they couldn't, and they spoke better.
You know, I never heard of this before. This is why I love to do radio shows. I've been doing this, like I said, since 1964, but this is a paradox I've never heard about before. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Any internal struggle that's fueled by your own anxiety, as stuttering isn't purely from anxiety, but it's fueled by it, you can actually short-circuit by actually allying yourself with it and embracing it and even trying to encourage it.
So you talk about that, encouraging and exaggerating psychiatric symptoms, and you talk about that in your book, The Healing Paradox, as perhaps can people do that for themselves, or would there be too much fear involved as they bring up those issues for themselves? Should they work with a professional to get through that?
Some simple things people can do on their own, and other things more complex with a greater layer of determining factors would probably be best to work with a therapist. Performance anxiety, for example, people getting terrified by speaking in front of other people, for example, a couple of simple things they can do is, when they get up on stage and they're about to, they can tell the audience, gee, I'm feeling so nervous right now. 9 times out of 10, they'll feel less nervous for having said that, because you're going with it, you're recognizing, you're not trying to fight it and try to pretend you're not nervous, which makes it worse. The other thing is to, when you're extremely anxious in front of people and you're about to present something and perform something, you can perform what Gestalt therapists recognize, is that your anxiety is really excitement that you're turning against yourself. You're really excited about this opportunity. And if you recognize that, gee, this means I'm excited, and go with it. And yes, the more anxiety I'm feeling, that means I have more energy, more excitement, more passion to put into this. Good actors know about that, and it enlivens their performances, animates their performances. So there are simple everyday things people can do. For more complex situations, though, good therapists, particularly those who can practice some of these approaches, would be a good idea. OCD, for example, conventional psychiatry does not really have a very good answer for that. Yes, there are these SSRI medications that can suppress symptoms to a degree, And when you suffer a lot from OCD, even a little bit of relief feels welcome.
Well, we actually have to, believe it or not, stop right there. But that's a good ending, that even a little bit of relief. But look at these natural therapies. Get a copy of Dr. Stephen Goldsmith's book, The Healing Paradox. Really excellent discussion. I so much enjoyed it. I learned some new things myself. Thank you for your open-mindedness and your seeking of the truth, because that's what I think overall you have been doing. You want to help people. You are a psychiatrist. You see what works. Natural therapies, which are much better risk-benefit profile, and maintaining the option to use those big guns when appropriate. We don't throw them away. But we take an approach that is individualized and can help each patient. And that's the kind of thing you will hear about here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and by getting a copy of Dr. Goldsmith's book, The Healing Paradox. Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you very much, Ellen, for inviting me. I enjoyed it.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. You can always visit the archives and listen to any of the great shows that are here on a daily basis. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com and Facebook, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.